This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb, my co-host. We have Tony Ellis in the studio today. Tony will be speaking at Icon on June 20th, 2013. He'll be having a show in a couple of venues in town at that time, but we're looking forward to him talking about his work at Icon. We've been having a discussion, and I'd like to ask him to talk a little bit about some of these ideas that have come up in the radio on the radio today. One of the most, well, several angles came up. One was, how do you break into the art world that, you're going to come out and say you're aged on the to the world today?
60-ish.
60-ish. Okay. How do you break into the art world in your 60s from, Fairfield, for one thing, is another. It's a riddle we have been all working on, and there's various ways we have interfaced with the art world from Fairfield. So it brings up all kinds of issues, this discussion. You know, what does making it in the art world mean? What does breaking in mean? What maybe we all want to just be quietly creating in our studios and share with our friends, and that's success and good enough? Or do we want to be like the world's famous artist, and then you're the most famous artist in the world? Then do you have to then become the most famous artist in the galaxy to really feel good about yourself? And then do you have to become God himself and know yourself to be the creator? I mean, where does it begin and where does it end? But in any case, I found it fascinating that you brought up this guy who, at the age of what, 60?
He's 64. His name is Raphael Leonardo Black, and he's having a show in New York City at the moment, and his work is now selling for, I think, in the region of $2,000 or $3,000 a painting. But he has basically been a recluse artist for most of his life, painting away in Brooklyn. And suddenly somebody discovered his work, and it's starting to sell at 64 years old. So there is hope for us. it is possible. He is in New York, which helps probably.
Well, and Brooklyn is where it's happening right now,
yeah,
too. So some of the young people that were probably 24 discovered him and turned him on to the gallery people. Now, he's been making art like all his life,
yes,
pretty much, and he just was...
Well,
happily
doing
that?
With a name like
Raphael, that, he had
Michelangelo
to be.
Black.
Leonardo.
Did he name himself?
Well, if his parents named him that, clearly they had a career in mind.
Yeah. Well, it's that, you know, that name and form, whatever name you have eventually becomes the form you take. So in his case, although is there a famous artist called Black? I can't think of anybody.
No, but he's a black man.
He is, right? Actually. Yes.
So I think he named himself. That's what I'm guessing.
It's a
somewhere along the line.
It's a good name. Well, you can tell what generation he has, because in the article in the New York Times about him, he quotes a line from a song by the Loving Spoonful. So only people of a certain age will remember that band. So, what he said was the way to produce art. The line he quoted was, "You came upon a quiet day and simply seemed to take your place." And I think he's talking about that. Just something feels right and you want to create something from it.
Well, you've got me really interested in this guy because of this quote and the other quote I'll have you read in a moment, because he is like hitting the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remind myself this thing that we're beginning to talk about now every moment as an artist and as a teacher and as someone moving through life, that you begin to fall into a habitual way of doing things. And mm-hmm. you start to, like, in a knee-jerk reaction, say the thing you always say or make the thing you always make or like that. And there's an inkling in there that's telling you, wait a minute, this is it. This is the thing. And no matter how famous you become by making the wrong thing, or how well you rationalize the wrong thing, another feeling, or not even no feeling, just the thing that happens, mm-hmm. how much you rationalize that that's good enough or just perfect and all this intellectual reasoning why it's the thing to do, there's an inkling inside that's telling you in a very fine way, no, that's not it. Or yes, that's it. I mean, that feeling I'm having, I mean, I think this is like what it's all about. And I go through this all the time. There's a feeling. And that feeling determines how I make a, you know, an image or how I say something to a student about their work. I could say the same thing I always say in this situation, or I could like attend to the feeling I'm having where I have to hesitate and say, wait a minute, I don't want to say what I've always said. I want to try to get at this feeling that I'm having about it and say something about that. And that's the art act. I mean, that's where you're really alive and doing your job as an artist, I think. And that this is real wiggly stuff. It's like putting your finger on it's like putting your finger on what reality actually is.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I may read the other quote.
Yeah, this other
it
quote.
Really, it goes right to this point.
Yeah, he's quoting from Cézanne, who described, here's some more bad French, but a petite sensation, which is, I think that's the correct way to say it, but it's the little feeling you get from being alive in the world. You have to find a way to present that, however, whoever you are. I guess style would be the word. You know, and I think he's talking about just what you said. You have this faint intuition that there's something you have to do, and then the rational mind can come in and take you this way and that way. It's not always, if you can get that initial feeling translated into a piece of work, that's going to be the success.
I mean,
work.
I think that's the job.
That's the job, yeah.
So these two quotes really brought it home.
And this is somebody who's built up his wisdom as an artist, not
right.
by having people see his work. He's worked as a recluse for maybe right. 40 years, and so he's relying completely on his own intuition about right. his work. He's doing it for his own satisfaction rather than the public right. satisfaction, and finally somebody's recognized the value of his work.
And I think it takes working alone all those years by yourself to kind of come to these understandings. Right now, we have people with talent and sharp awareness and all of this come and craftsmanship to some extent coming out of the art schools, sort of the stars of the art schools, and they're being scouted like by the galleries and the critics and the writers. I mean, there's an industry there that just like the rock stars are like made by the industry. These guys with talent are made into a star without any chance for them to have 10 years of like sorting through what it's all about. So that maturing period, I think, is extremely important. And it's being superseded now by the system. So I don't think that bodes well for, you know, the way it works right now in the arts.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think somebody said the other day, whatever you do in the world, there's always got to be some work involved. No matter how spontaneous and creative you are, you still, there's a process involved, which the more you follow that process, the more you're able to translate your finest artistic instincts into a piece of work, whatever you do. And if you shortcut that, you're probably going to get a more superficial representation of your original creative idea.
And the artist has to be his own disciplinarian and set the standards for himself. And the best way to do that is to look at all the great art through all of art history. That's one way to see other people who have, you know, figured that thing out and done something with it.
Yeah, and the problem is, what you pointed out, it's everything's being monetized the same way that music and all these different forms of art have been, and it tends to kidnap the process very early these days. And it doesn't really help if the only incentive is how to make money out of a piece of creative art. It can be damaging. It can, not in every case, if there's great talent, it can just burst forth and be successful straight away. But I think the majority of creative people need some time, gestation time.
Well, I think it would be helpful to Damien Hirst to put him in a cell for 10 years and he could take everything to a higher level. He's very talented, very smart, very interesting, and all of these things he's making, the business of art and the field, you know, the whole process is his canvas. But I think for his own good and like spiritual development as an artist, it wouldn't hurt to put him in a place for the mountains for 10 years and see what would happen.
Yeah. I don't think you should. I think as a creative person, or just as a human being, period, you should never feel you've reached the pinnacle. There should always be room for growth. And I think if you think at any point I've reached it, this is it, then the only way from the top of a pinnacle is downhill. So,
except it's hard to do that, because when the entire world has these expectations, mm-hmm. and this reputation has been built, it's hard to put it all back in the fire and allow it to come up again anew. People like the Beatles did it. The most world famous people. I mean, there's people that were world famous, the greatest, the best, the tops, and they would put things in the fire and come out with a whole new program. And it's rare, because it's hard to do once you become a caricature of yourself, and then you have to keep repeating that.
Right. I was interested because there's a few people in that situation, and I come from Yorkshire. And as David Hockney's from the same part of England as I am. And also, I was just watching a TV program about Patrick Stewart, the actor. Mm-hmm. Both of them went back to Yorkshire after wild success in America, decided they had to go back to their roots. And David Hockney now lives in a small seaside resort in Yorkshire, and he's going out and just painting country lanes and things, but he's doing it with an iPad and an iPhone, and he's just looking at it differently. And
well, he's a great example, because he keeps discovering new things and keeps revealing them to the people, and he's not just resting on his laurels.
Right, and he's not also, the fascinating thing is, he recently had a retrospective exhibition in London, and apparently it was just, it was a lot of money to get into the exhibition. He had to line around the block just to get in. But up in Yorkshire, where he comes from, his partner, who's I think now passed away, had bought this old woolen factory and turned it into an art gallery. And it's, Hockney donated a bunch of his work. So you can go to this place. It's free. I was there on my own. Four floors of Hockney's work, including some of his most recent. He just gave it to this art gallery. And so... I like that, because he's thinking his art is valuable just to be seen by people rather than just to sell. I think it's a very honest.
Now he's always been kind of an inspiration to me. Mm-hmm. I actually had a class with him at Berkeley, mm-hmm. and it made an impression on me. Who he was. This was at the peak of his like '60s success and stuff. But I've held one. In fact, the one thing I remember from that I have carried with me was that he made everybody put a piece of paper on the corner of their easel that held the original idea that they were starting from. And then you had to like refer to that, because I think he knew how easy it is to get away from what you're setting out to do.
We used to do that at life drawing classes when I was at art school. I don't think it was so much we were taught to do that, but I picked it up from somebody else, where you do a quick little sketch of the model in small form, and then you'd try and create that in a larger form. And it's actually very difficult to do.
Well, it's easy. I mean, this thing of the inkling is what I was connecting up there, because he knew, and I learned over time, how easy it is to go off. And then you can come up with all kinds of reasons why what you've done is okay. But what was it you really set out to do? What was that inkling? What was that initial,
what was that first little spark?
Way you saw things that was the aesthetic moment. And now we're commenting, we're talking, we're representing that experience.
Well, that, sorry.
No, well, I was just thinking of how this relates to writing fiction, which I've started doing a lot lately, because I mean, some authors do plan the whole thing, and they know what they're going to be writing about. But a lot of authors, I would say, from my readings, maybe half of the creative the fiction writers, start with a premise or something, but they know that as each character gets developed, they will take the story wherever they take it, and there's no controlling it.
They become animate. They become their own... Yeah. They become alive after a moment, and they have to do certain things.
Yeah, they have start priorities and requirements.
One other thing I like about what I've been doing recently, which is finding images and photographing them, but they're very abstract images, is that with digital technology, that thing that catches your attention can be captured and you don't lose it.
Yeah.
And I've gone back a couple of years later and photographed and looked at things which I photographed, and the magic is gone for some reason. Conditions of light, physical deterioration, the way my head is that day or whatever, I just don't see what I saw before. Mm-hmm. But with digital, like a digital camera, I've got it. Mm-hmm. It's captured. It's as far as I'm concerned, for an artist, it's fabulous technology.
Yeah,
because you can grab that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll just say, since we're about halfway through here, for those who just tuned in, jumped in their car and turned on the dial, that this is Icon Art Radio on KRUU 100.1 FM. And Alan Cobb and me, Bill Teeple, are interviewing Tony Ellis. So, and we're having this is what you call an interesting discussion, don't you think?
Hopefully. Like,
I hope all of you out there are interested. I'm finding it interesting. For artists, we're having the discussion again.
This is a discussion that's probably been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah, this is the discussion, yeah.
Coffee bars or whatever people did.
That's right.
To entertain themselves, yeah.
But it's ways that artists remind themselves of what we do together. And what the job is.
And I think it's reflective of the fact, literally the universe, you can't pin it down. You can't, it's always changing and your perspective on it is changing. And to say, I have figured out a way of doing art and there's no other way to do it is a ridiculous concept when you're dealing with this infinitely creative environment that we're a part of.
But young people always think, oh, this is the new art, and this is how it should be, the old art of our people who came before us, that's old-fashioned, and now we've got the new. It's sort of, there's also the point of view of each love generation and each age group, and it's from our point of view now, we're getting a little bit along, we can start to see the patterns. And it's very interesting to see how people enter into this art-making process or the living of life process, and they go through stages of seeing things that have to do with their age level. And it's an unfolding process. And as we go along further, the mystery of it is how it begins to be, as you're saying, begins to be more the story. And if we can talk about that mystery, we're more getting at the real job.
Well, the neat thing about the mystery is that it gets more mysterious the more you learn instead of less mysterious.
No, I agree. I think after, I don't know, 20, 25 years of sort of earnest spiritual seeking, I kind of one day went, you know what? I'm never going to understand this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be in awe of it and enjoy that feeling of that magical feeling of this is too big to comprehend. Let's just enjoy the experience of it instead. And
the artist
too big to comprehend, but let's paint it.
Right, let's try.
Let's just paint it anyway.
But in the back of my mind, you're going, well, okay, I may capture a little bit of it, but it's only a little bit of it. And if that little bit can reveal the majesty of the whole, then fabulous.
Yeah.
But I think we're all striving for that. But then one little shift of light on an image out, you know, if you're looking at an image outside, and it changes it, and that's gone. And sometimes you only have, you know, you were talking about an inner feeling. That little intuition can be gone. You can have forgotten about it. That little trick of light where you see something that gives you the idea it can be gone in a nanosecond. And it's just infinitely happening over and over again.
It's a triangle between the object of perception and the artist perceiving and the technology of like how to address that, how to do something about it, and then we have that thing that remains.
But every single human being at every millisecond is processing information through their senses in this way. Except it just becomes mechanical and they don't realize they're doing it. But actually, every single cell... I saw a documentary on the BBC and they had animated the workings of a human cell and how it responds to a virus coming in. And you literally had these little creatures, what the RNA, tugging information like a little slave across this little railway track through the middle of the cell. And it was like very alive.
Oh, yeah.
And living, and every single little part of it had this little job to do, and it was just unbelievable. And that's just in one little cell. And so we've got all that to look at as an artist. You've got now, with the technology we've got, we're looking out into the universe and seeing all these magical things. We're looking into the cells, and it's so many possibilities to get these magical ideas. Mm.
It's hard to, when you think about it that way, it's hard to imagine that we would even entertain the notion that intelligence is only something that happens with human beings operating their brains. But even the idea that intelligence as a life form is limited to animals and critters and creatures and maybe plants and things. Because you take it down to smaller scales and, a squirrel has a brain the size of a split pea and they're pretty busy and complicated. Then you go down a little farther and a gnat or a mosquito has a brain still and it's, the size of a fine pencil dot on a piece of paper. But then you go down even farther, and there are these little creatures that live in the hair follicles in your eyelids that look like dragons.
Right.
They have little nervous systems, and they're going about their business all through the day. And we're still dealing with multi-celled organisms. And then you look at the individual cells, and they're so complicated, we haven't even begun to describe the way they really operate. And yet their component parts are primarily molecules. They're not little creatures, they're little molecules, and yet they behave. And that behavior reflects some kind of structural intelligence, which is still there at the level of the atoms that make up the molecules
and they're all
and the subatomic particles.
Beautifully constructed.
Yeah.
And the deeper you go, it's just amazing how the detailed, every single detail means something and has a function.
Yeah, there's nothing but intelligence.
Right, and it's visually beautiful. You go inside a cell and you've got these like Buckminster Fuller geodesic domes floating around inside there. I mean, just perfectly made without, not a single mistake in the construction.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's literally mind-blowing.
But what comes to mind here is something that has to do with Buckminster Fuller's idea that what is actually happening is 90 degrees to the... I mean, he was talking about the full pull of, I think, gravity on a... It is this way, but what is actually happening is 90 degrees to that, which is the... kind of the orbit around. This is scientific stuff. I can't even talk about. But what it comes with. But he was getting at it in this thing that I can't even explain. But the idea is there's probably some intelligence deep, 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 way down inside of there that's trying to decide whether to take tea at the moment or not. Something that's like, and the whole universe is working. All this is layers and layers and layers and layers of it all coming out. And we're experiencing it at our level in this world. And there's somebody deep inside there just trying to decide whether to have tea or not.
Well, it's like, what do the quantum so-called particles do in between the quantum of action? And the answer must be they have tea. Right. They kick back, they joke around a little, they have some conversations about art. You know, they listen to the radio, and then they manifest again, and then they go back and
right. sip of tea. And to sort of bring it full circle in the discussion, it's like those little intuitions that you're talking about come from those little things, having tea somewhere deep, you know what I mean? And you're somehow picking up on that, and that's what's so marvelous about creation, that it's all it's all connected through ideas, concepts, decisions, all these things are part of the mechanics of creation on every level.
And you can't not be in awe of the mystery, like every moment.
And you could say that the greatest contribution of science is not, in a sense, the knowledge of how it works that it provides, as much as it is its ability to reveal the scale of what we don't know and how well that works in spite of our not having any idea how it works. I mean, look at dark matter, for heaven's sakes, and not to mention dark energy. You know, these are, well, maybe half of the universe is actually out there making it work the way it does. We haven't even seen it. We don't even know that it's actually there. And it's about as fundamental in physics as you can get. And it's just a total mystery with a few tantalizing hints here and there. I'm trying not to start a new conversation with 1 minute left.
We may have to make another
part
radio
two
show.
May have to be done.
In any case, we want to thank you for coming and talking with us, Tony Ellis, on Icon Art Radio here on KRUU. And he will be giving a talk at Icon Gallery in Fairfield on June 20th, 2013. Thanks again for coming. Any last shot? You got 30 seconds.
Oh, I just love the conversation we've just had. I think it's what makes art, creating art, fun when you get into those realms of possibility.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.